It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview. Well, welcome to Quantum number 76. I guess this is the first proper one of the new year. And we have to begin with, of course, the trouble in Iran, where Qassem Soleimani, really the second in command, was killed by a US strike after he threatened US troops. Now, there's a great deal that one could say about this. I note just incidentally that Channel 4 were rebuked by the State Department for saying that the dead Iranian government official was just a government official. But in actual fact, he is on both the UK, the US, and other wanted terrorist officials. He's a man who's been responsible for a significant number of deaths. Now, what's fascinating is not that this has been done and whether it was wise to be done, because who knows whether provoking this may provoke some kind of reaction. But I think the bigger problem here is the reaction that we have within our own country to this. I was just astonished to hear this response from Jeremy Corbyn and then Boris Johnson. Let's listen to this.
The United States actions have undoubtedly escalated the risk of a dangerous conflict and in an already destabilized region, putting civilians, UK troops and nationals at risk and leaving the Iran nuclear deal in danger of being dead in the water. This government's response is not putting the interests of this country first, but instead seems more interested in prioritising the Prime Minister's relationship with President Trump over the security of the region and of this country. Isn't the truth, Mr. Speaker, that this Prime Minister is unable to stand up to President Trump because he's hitched his wagon to a trade deal with the United States, and that prioritises everything else that he ought to be considering?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I was kind of waiting for the little green men thing to come out at the end about the trade deal. This is absolute fiction. But what I will say is that the UK will continue to work for de-escalation in the region. I think we're having a great deal of success in bringing together a European response and in bridging that, the European response, with that, of course, of our American friends, and working both with the Iranians and with the Iraqis to dial this thing down. But he should be in absolutely no doubt. And this is, of course, the leader of the opposition who has famously received £10,000 from Iranian press TV. He should be in absolutely no doubt that we are determined to guarantee with everything that we can the safety and security of the people of Iraq, whereas he, of course, would disband NATO. And it is this government that will continue to stick up for the people across the Middle East who have suffered at the hands of Qassem Soleimani and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, God's force, that he has led and whose terrorism he has promoted. And I'm very surprised at the end of these...
Do you know, the man was a horrible character in so many ways and responsible for so many deaths. And to find people on the streets in Britain, in Glasgow, in Manchester, in London, protesting his death and claiming that it puts the Americans in the same category, I feel there's something profoundly wrong there. And listening to Jeremy Corbyn makes me so glad that we did not appoint him. Why? Because Jeremy Corbyn has appeared on Iranian state television and was paid for doing so. He has been a defender of this regime, and it is a most oppressive regime. It's bizarre that people who are left-wing are defending one of the most theocratic, fundamentalist regimes in the world. I just don't get it. Now, again, I'm not saying that what happened was wise or even good, but I do think the reactions are very revealing. And also, we do have to say, think about the 50-plus people who died in the stampede at Soleimani's funeral. Or think about the 173
people on the Ukrainian plane who died. It almost beggars belief that that was just an accident. I'm afraid Iran has form on this, as we know. Isn't it incredible that the Iranians fired missiles at a US base? Now, no one was killed and no one was harmed, although according to Iranian TV, 80 American soldiers were killed. And it seems to be that having given America a slap in the face, as they said, that they're backing off. Well, we shall see. I think if they back off, Trump will back off, and he will end up being proved right against all the experts, having taken out one of the most dangerous men in the world, and yet not evoked any significant retaliation. But we don't know. We will wait and see what happens. Now let's return also to the question of the Australian fires. As I'm sitting here just now, in the past 3 days, we've had some rain in different places, and this has been most welcome. It's certainly not taken away the danger, but most of the fires are now contained. We are ready for another really rough weekend, I think, and particularly on a place called Kangaroo Island, where the forecast is not great. But in all of this, I've written a couple of pieces about it, a piece for Christian Today, which has kind of gone viral, about what's the truth about the Australian bushfires, and then also a piece about what is truth. And I think, let me just quote a little bit from that, because I do think this is really important. And I'm thinking just in general now, not just about these bushfires, but when we engage in conversation, when we engage in public, it does feel to me that the truth has gone out of the window. So I suggested this in the article, and I do refer it to you on theweflea.com. We have to be cautious about making judgments based on the limited information we have. Secondly, we need to think well of others. They may be wrong, as we may be, but that does not mean they are deliberately lying or that they are stupid. Then we need to seek after truth, even inconvenient truths. Sometimes we find ourselves facing things that are true that undermine what we believe or what we want or our side or our cause, but we have to do that. We have to be honest. I'm far more likely to trust a politician, a journalist, a church leader if they tell us, if what they tell us is detrimental to their own cause as well as what promotes their cause. We need to be careful not to dismiss things so quickly. Not every post you disagree with is a result of Russian bots, communist plots, or far-right idiots. We should even check the fact checkers. We should not be afraid to challenge, and we shouldn't allow ourselves to be emotionally bullied or scared into silence. One rather sad response to my post is on the bushfires was that they were scared it would be used by climate deniers. So what? The Bible's been used by all kinds of people and didn't stop the Lord giving it to us. People misuse things. We also need to find reliable sources. This is getting harder and harder. And that, by the way, is one of the reasons that I do this podcast. I hope that what we give you here is reliable. The facts are facts, opinions are opinions. You can make your own mind up. If you come across any error or any falsehood, then I plead with you just to let me know, because I will certainly correct that. I'm not claiming omniscience. We must find reliable sources. We also need to stop seeking our identity in our being right. It's okay for us to get things wrong. God knows. He doesn't love us because we're right. He loves us because he loves us. Now, that doesn't mean he doesn't care about truth. He does. It just means he doesn't need us to tell him the truth. And then I think we need to be aware of absolutists. Now, what do I mean by that? Every one of us has fundamental beliefs. We're fundamentalists in that sense. But an absolutist or a fundamentalist in the sense I'm speaking about is somebody who is so limited that they are convinced that all their beliefs are always true. People often parrot opinions as though they were absolute facts. And again, if you notice me doing that, please, please, please let me know. I think the more I go on, the more I see that all truth is God's truth. I need not be afraid of any truth. But there is only one person who can be totally relied on, who is the truth. And in him alone I trust absolutely. His word is truth, and I trust that unequivocally. And I think from that basis, that doesn't close my mind, it opens my mind. Why should I be afraid of anything that's true? And so we seek to understand and know. Okay, sorry, that was a rather long, not rant, but just something I feel passionately about, that we need to speak truth into a post-truth culture. By the way, as regards the bushfires, we do need more rain, but I thought one of the most fascinating things was a news story that shooters have got the green light to kill 10,000 feral camels in the Northern Territories, and that some Christian Aboriginal communities are opposed to this because of the role of camels in the nativity. But did you know that in Australia there are 1 million feral camels who produce the equivalent of 4,000 cars per year emissions? Makes you think. Let's go to the Golden Globes. Listen to this.
Russell Crowe could not be here with us tonight because he is at home in Australia protecting his family from the devastating bushfires. He sent along this message in case he won. Make no mistake, the tragedy unfolding in Australia is climate change based. We need to act based on science, move our global workforce to renewable energy, and respect our planet for the unique and amazing place it is. That way, we all have a future. Thank you.
Yes, that was Jennifer Aniston on behalf of Russell Crowe, emotionally telling us that, well, she knows the answer. Hollywood knows the answer. That the whole question of what's going on here in Australia in the bushfires is just climate change. I believe that climate change has made it worse. But I think her view is rather too simplistic. As is the view that Russell Crowe was back fighting fires, which seemed to be her implication. Russell Crowe lives in Rose Bay, which is a suburb of Sydney, which if it's on fire, then the whole of Australia is finished. It's probably the place least likely to suffer from bushfires. But he's got property in other places, so I guess he has to defend that as well. But the Golden Globes were dominated, I think, by Ricky Gervais. Now, Ricky Gervais, in my view, is rude and crude, and he was here. But in that rudeness and crudeness, instead of turning it on people who weren't there, he turned it on the people who were. And they just did not know how to cope. Now, I'm only going to quote just a last bit at the end where he speaks about Apple and the woke companies. Listen to this.
Apple roared into the TV game with a morning show. A superb drama, yeah. A superb drama about the importance of dignity and doing the right thing. Made by a company that runs sweatshops in China. So, well, you say you're woke, but the companies you work for, I mean, unbelievable. Apple, Amazon, Disney. If ISIS started a streaming service, you'd call your agent, wouldn't you? So, if you do win an award tonight, don't use it as a platform to make a political speech, right? You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world. Most of you spent less time in school than Greta Thunberg. So, if you win, right, come up, accept your little award, thank your agent and your God, and so
I think he was spot on. I think it is these companies like Apple and so on, good for him for saying it, that they use the equivalent of slave labor and then go on about social justice. And I think having Hollywood celebrities tell us what's right and wrong and what we should be doing, making political speeches, is absolutely, to me, it's pointless. There was one actress, who I'm not going to name, who boasted that she had an abortion, which enabled her to become an actress and get a Golden Globe. We're at that stage now, sacrificing our children to get Hollywood trinkets. God have mercy on us. Well, let's go somewhere else. Let's go to the United Kingdom and the royal family.
Harry and Meghan have become a mega couple, one of the most famous double acts in the world. With that fame has come attention, a ruthless press scrutiny that has appeared at times to wear down the couple. It hasn't always been clear the royals were totally comfortable with their allotted role. But perhaps no one expected the extraordinary statement released tonight, a statement that the BBC understands was made without the consultation of other royals, including the Queen. They said after many...
In an astonishing statement, Harry and Meghan have said this. Let me quote from their press release and their tweet or Facebook post or whatever it was. After many months of reflection and internal discussions, we have chosen to make a transition this year in starting to carve out a progressive new role within this institution. We intend to step back as senior members of the royal family and work to become financially independent while continuing to fully support Her Majesty the Queen. It is with your encouragement, particularly over the last few years, we feel prepared to make this adjustment. We now plan to balance our time between the United Kingdom and North America, continuing to honour our duty to the Queen and the Commonwealth and our patronages. This geographic balance will enable us to raise our son with an appreciation for the royal tradition into which he was born, while also providing our family with the space to focus on the next chapter, including the launch of our new charitable entity. That's the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, otherwise known as Harry and Meghan. Well, forgive me for being cynical about that, but they're going to do new progressive causes, and I despair at that. I think it's wonderful if they are going to row back on receiving any money from the public purse. I doubt that that will be the case. I think they will continue to be able to benefit from the fame that they have. But the idea of progressive causes, I guess that's going to be climate change too. But they're going to spend their time between the two continents. I have a sneaking suspicion that they won't be taking a sailboat to travel between America and the United Kingdom. It's interesting that Harry has complained about the commoditization of his wife. Well, I think there has been a commoditization of the royal family. And, you know, we have God Save the Queen. Well, when the Queen goes, it for me is difficult to see how the royal family can survive without her guiding hand. Okay, I guess we're going to come across a lot of this in 2020, but here we go with our intolerant society. Let me just list you some things that are happening. The Librarian Society have been debating whether to take J.K. Rowling's books off the shelves. This is not fundamentalist Christians seeking to ban Harry Potter. This is the Librarian Society. Oh, dear. EasyJet, after one complaint, have banned the phrase ladies and gentlemen in order to be more inclusive. Go figure. A professor, Ted McCoy, a historian of prisons and punishment and associate professor of sociology at the University of Calgary in Canada, has tweeted out that he is prepared to fail students who cite Jordan Peterson. At all, in any form. He lists himself as anti-fascist and his pronouns as he, him. Lecturers, if you thought that was bad, this is worse. Lecturers at the University of Leeds, I'm sorry, I'm laughing, but this is true, this is not a spoof, have been warned not to use capital letters to avoid scaring students. You don't use all caps at points. We know that's shouting because it might make them too scared to do the assignment. Any lack of clarity, says the university, can generate anxiety and even discourage students from attempting the assignment at all. Generally avoid using capital letters for emphasis and the overuse of do and especially don't. There is nothing to say that would not involve me using capitals or bleeps.
That is, of course, the Beatles, Back in the USSR. They didn't have a song about back in China, but it should be, because the Chinese company Tencent has signed a $3 billion deal to buy up 10% of Universal Music Group, who have Adele, Justin Bieber, Taylor Swift, the Beatles, and Queen. So there we have it. The Chinese are going to own the Beatles. And let's move on to something a little bit more theological. This is the well-known pastor, preacher, who's just moving to Asia, Francis Chan.
Again, I'm not making any like grand statements. I'm just saying some of the stuff I didn't know. I didn't know that for the first 1,500 years of church history, everyone saw it as the literal body and blood of Christ. And it wasn't until 500 years ago that someone popularized a thought that it's just a symbol and nothing more. I didn't know that. I thought, wow, well, that's something to consider. While I won't make a strong statement, I will make a statement about this. It was at that same time that for the first time, someone put a pulpit in the front of the gathering. Because before that, it was always the body and blood of Christ that was central to their gatherings. For 1,500 years, it was never one guy and his pulpit being the center of the church. It was the body and blood of Christ. And even the leaders just saw themselves as partakers. And oh man, we're not worthy, we're not worthy, we're not worthy. I say that because the church is more divided than any time in history. What does this book tell us clearly? That he does not want any divisions in his church. And for 1,000 years, there was just one church. Did you know that? We're so used to growing up in a time when literally there are over 30,000 Christian denominations right now. But for the first 1,000 years, there was just one. What was interesting is communion was at the center of the room every time they gathered. And it wasn't a pulpit where a guy preached. After studying in his office by himself for 20 hours. See, right now we've got guys like me that go in a room, study, you know. That's what I was doing for years. Meanwhile, other guys went in their rooms and studied. And then we started all giving different messages. So many contradicting each other, and pretty soon it's like, well, I follow Piper, I follow Chan, I follow, you know, it's just like everyone's following different guys. I'm just saying, I believe there was something about taking communion out of the center of the church and replace it with a gifted speaker.
Now, why did I play that? It's just a little bit of theology. I just think we do need to be aware of superstar pastors. Now, I like Francis Chan, and I like his earnestness and so on. But he comes out with stuff that a simple fact check would really have helped him. You know, we're talking about truth. First of all, there wasn't one church for 1,000 years. There were several, and not least the split between the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox, one of the major splits within the church. Secondly, it's wrong to caricature the modern church as being a church in which the pulpit, where one guy studies in a study and comes out and speaks, and that's it. Whereas before, it was the communion tables at the front. Now, that's true for some, but this setting up of communion and against the word is, it's a false understanding of history. But I think the one that got me was, and this has been cited by some of my Roman Catholic friends as wonderful, that his view of the Eucharist, he's talking about the communion as being able to turn bread and wine into the literal body of Christ. Now, the fact that he says it, the fact that some people believe it, the fact that you state it earnestly doesn't make it any the less nonsense. To put it in its most crude terms, we are not literally chewing on the physical body of Jesus Christ. We are not human cannibals. Now, I realize that there's a case to argue for the communion being more than just a symbol. And in fact, that's a case I would argue. But to argue that it's the literal physical body of Christ, to me, makes a nonsense both of scripture and of logic and reason. I guess my Catholic friends will be in touch to just, if you are one of them, please do. Please let me know if I've misunderstood and got this wrong. A bit of good church news, or interesting church news anyway. The remains of a Christian church have been uncovered in Ethiopia. It's from the 4th century AD, and it shows that Christianity came to Ethiopia, as the Ethiopians have claimed, very early. That's 3,000 miles from Rome. And yet there's this Christian church. Again, I find that just amazing. Okay, I'm going to leave you with a piece of music. It's Scottish fiddle music, and as it plays out, let me just tell you who it is. It's a gentleman called Jim Daly. Now, Jim Daly is a folk musician. He wouldn't be particularly well known. He's a Glaswegian, a good man in many ways. He was the father of one of my elders, Owen, in St. Peter's. When Jim got cancer, I visited him a few times. I found him to be an empathetic, a kind, and intelligent man. We prayed together. I don't know where he was at spiritually, but like everyone who's listening to this, I prayed and I pray that you will come to know the Lord. This music is beautiful. It's what God the Creator has given us, the ability to create music amongst many other abilities. But we need to dedicate our gifts to him, and we need to come to know him. So God bless you. We live in a world where there's a great deal, as I said, of confusion, a great deal of trouble, a great deal of war. But we can look to the one who gives us music and joy, and the one who ultimately brings us peace. God bless you. See you next week.